There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Ah, yes. The PM hours. This is what this feels like.
I knew what it felt like. I didn't know what it felt like to be with a microphone in my face.
Mm, well, this is it. We've made it to the big time. Uh-huh. Midday Mobile.
No.
Not yet.
No. Morning is the big time.
That's right.
You ever forget that.
We've been demoted. And Dalton Orwig and Dan Brennan filling in for Sean Sullivan today on Midday Mobile. Sean taking a bit of a, R&R, I guess you can call it. And
he deserves it.
He does. He deserves it for sure. Don't pull your fire alarm. We'll still be on the morning show. No need to panic right now. There's no vote you need to get to. You can just sit here and listen to us for the next couple of hours.
Yeah, so a guy pulls a fire alarm. Was that Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was to delay, or that was just speculation? Because he said, look, man, I was just trying to get out the door.
Yeah, he was trying to get to the vote, and he believed that in order to open the door, he needed to pull the fire alarm.
Mm-hmm. It's happened to me dozens of times.
Who hasn't it happened to? So make sure you don't make the same mistake today. Yeah. No cause for alarm, just Dalton Orwig and Dan Brennan filling in for Sean Sullivan.
When you approach a door and you're inside a building, because that's where those sneaky fire alarms are.
They are.
Always on the inside, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So you're leaving and you're thinking, well, I could grab this handle and open the door, or part of your brain is saying,
that alarm is right there.
It's right there.
This is also funny because Saturday we went grocery shopping, and every time we go to this particular grocery store, I explain to my 4-year-old what the doors are with the big red sign on them that says emergency exit only. She's wondering why there are so many different bells and whistles near these doors.
Mm-hmm.
And probably at the exact same time that the squad's Bowman was pulling the fire alarm,
she was ready to go through.
She was, but I was explaining to her why we don't do that.
Uh-huh.
And maybe Bowman needed somebody to explain to him the importance of not pulling an alarm when...
His excuse was like somebody Izzy's age.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so, I was just trying to get out the door, Daddy.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So there you go. Don't pull the fire alarm today. And I'm glad to be guest hosting. Really glad to be sitting down after I have a standing desk. That was my birthday present from Sean. So I've been standing the last 3 hours. I've really been looking forward to getting back in here.
It's funny because I've been places where in radio they recommend that you stand when you're doing the show because it, I don't know, you have more energy or something.
Sound better.
You sound like you're more into it. I don't know. So for years I did stand. And now you do the opposite.
Stand when I'm not on the air.
You sit like a sack of lard for 3 hours during our show, showing minimal energy.
Very little.
Then I go into our office. You've got this new standing desk that I've never seen anybody so proud of anything. And you're acting like, you know, you're impersonating a DJ at a club. I mean, it's pretty funny.
I'm at Hangout Fest.
Yeah.
You said I look like the keyboardist for Chicago. Or something like that?
Well, you don't look like him. It just reminded me, you know, there you are, and in come the crowd that wanted to meet Dalton Orwig, and you just start hammering out Saturday in the Park.
Yeah.
And it looks like you're at a keyboard.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, you know, brand new present from Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I offhand one time mentioned, you know, it'd be cool to have a standing desk, and then birthday comes around, and he's like, hey, guess what? You got a standing desk. How long can you wait before you sit back down again?
Well, you know,
if I'm sitting down at the standing desk,
you're in trouble.
I think I have to stand for the rest of the year minimum.
Just look at it like this. Anytime you're in our office, the national anthem is playing. You've got to stand and remain standing until it's over. And guess what? It's never over.
No.
You requested it. Sean got it for you. So there you go.
I will be standing for a very long time. We have some great guests on the way today. If you heard the end of the Jeff Poor Show, kind of laid those out. John Sharp with AL.com. You hear him on Midday Mobile fairly often with Sean Sullivan. We'll have him on, and he's got a great article kind of summing up so far who may be running for the House in District 2. Once these lines are officially done and set in stone for the 2024 election, and actually a couple lawmakers who don't live currently in the new District 2 may be running for District 2. So we'll have John lay that out. Also, he's written recently about where we stand with Amtrak and its return to Mobile. So we'll get into that with him. And hour number two, the 1 o'clock hour, Dr. Lou Campomanosi, who's been with the Common Sense campaign for some time, and you've probably heard him on this station at one point or another. We'll talk to him about his retirement. He's retiring from public political life, and he's had a lot. He's had his hand in a lot of different political events that have happened around here, especially these last 5-10 years. So we'll kind of
going back to the Tea Party. Was he involved there?
That's exactly right. Okay. And the No Toll movement for the bridge. So we'll talk with Dr. Lou, and then in the second half of next hour, Danny Cordy with Mobile Sports Authority. They have a big game coming up this weekend, the Gulf Coast Challenge. But they've had a busy summer, and really November. I've never seen a calendar so packed as Mobile Sports Authority has for not just this month, but next month especially. So we'll get into that with Danny. Earlier today, some big news and some more information still coming in on this, but an officer-involved shooting here in Mobile. Mm-hmm. This happened south of Government at the, according to NBC 15, the corner of Glenwood Street and Senator Street. There was a big police presence. Police Chief Paul Prine was on the scene. We have audio from him here in just a second. According to Chief Prine, a suspect on the scene, this was on Glenwood Street, the police were called out there. They heard there was a suspect on the roof of an abandoned home.
Okay.
So they show up, and according to Prine, a suspect fired his gun at the responding officers, and both officers returned gunfire, and the suspect then died. I'll go ahead and play this. Thanks to Fox 10 for getting this out so quickly. Police Chief Prine was on the scene and talked with the media a little bit. Again, this just happened within the last couple of hours, really after our morning show wrapped up. Here is Police Chief Prine on what he has seen and what he's allowed to tell the media.
We don't know the identity of the individual as of yet. We're trying to determine that. Obviously, this is an ongoing investigation. We will have to determine what the mental condition was, certainly, of this individual. And I'm thankful that the police department responded to this call and not a civilian or a person in the community that would not have been prepared to deal with this.
And was there only one officer on the scene when
there
this happened?
Yeah, there was two officers that responded to the scene.
And you said they both returned gunfire?
Right. It's my belief that both officers returned gunfire. To what extent, I'm not sure. But they did strike the individual at least once, causing the individual to succumb to his injuries.
Do you know how many shots were fired from the pistol grip shotgun?
All that's part of the investigation. I won't have that information for some time until we investigate it. And there was body-worn camera of the incident.
Is that house occupied?
It appears to be vacant. Okay. Yes.
So this was someone from the community saw something that wasn't right.
Yeah, so someone in the community had originally called the police department to state that there was someone on top of this roof, the 600 block of Glenwood Street. So obviously the Mobile Police Department responded. The house being vacant as it was, I believe the front door was unsecured, so they wasn't quite sure if they were responding to a burglary or if someone was trespassing, really what the circumstances were. It just goes to show the vulnerabilities that the type calls that law enforcement respond to, which would have otherwise been just a typical Monday morning. And unfortunately, we're here having to deal with this situation. And, you know, we don't know the identity yet. All that's being investigated. And, of course, we'll have to attempt to notify the family, the next of kin, to make notification.
What happens now with the plane?
So as of right now, the case is under investigation. The officers involved will certainly be interviewed. They will immediately go on administrative leave. And, of course, we'll have to make sure that, you know, we follow up on their well-being as well, because these are tragic events. You know, there's no joy in anybody losing their life in our community, and especially in these type of situations. It's unfortunate. Certainly our hearts and prayers will be with the family during this time, and hopefully the family can shed some light on this individual and maybe the situation.
Will anyone be assisting in this investigation?
Well, like all investigations, there'll be two parts to this investigation. There's the criminal investigation. There's the administrative investigation. The criminal is to determine if the officers were lawful in the use of deadly force. The administrative investigation is, you know, determine whether the officers followed policy, certainly with that use of force. The district attorney's office will also do their own independent investigation, and you know, ultimately the investigation will be sent to the district attorney's office, so it will go before a grand jury here in Mobile County. All right, we'll keep you posted.
So that's it from Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine. Again, this happened, I guess, in the 8 o'clock hour. That's when reports started coming out, and we'll get you updated with any new information we get throughout the afternoon. This is obviously under investigation. No ID of the suspect at this point, but you know, this has been a particularly trying week around here over the last week for law enforcement. You had Thursday in Sims PD was right out there in the Mobile County Sheriff's Office as well for that absolutely awful tragedy, murder-suicide involving two young children. It's so tough to stomach the details in that story, and my heart just breaks. And then you have this officer-involved shooting involving Mobile PD this morning, and, you know, they never want to see that day come either. Mobile police, any law enforcement, they don't really want that to happen. So thoughts and prayers out to everyone over this last week. And then you have firefighter Sunday night, Saturday night,
injured at the Jaguar Cleaners. Right?
Yeah, fell off the roof, 3-alarm fire, and apparently in serious condition, at least the latest from Fox 10. So it's been tough for law enforcement. You see anybody out there, first responders, hat off to them. Yep. We're coming back. More Midday Mobile on the way.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Ah, yeah, Ted Nugent bringing us back. Midday Mobile, Dalton Orwig, Dan Brennan in for Sean Sullivan.
Just looking over the map real quick, Dalton, the site of that police shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Just for clarity's sake, if you're listening, you're thinking, exactly where is Senator Street? It looks like it is maybe a block south of government, so it's in the area of Little Flower Church.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the back of Little Flower Church and the parking area. If you're going to the CYO Hall, watch the little kids play. I've done that a few times. So it's like a block back, and that's where it intersects with Glenwood. And so that's basically what we're talking about.
And that happened this morning. We just had Paul Prine, his presser, or he talked with the media after all this. And we'll keep you updated. Anything else we see on that throughout the next couple of hours of this show, we'll keep you updated. And, of course, more will come in throughout the day, and tomorrow morning on Mobile Mornings, we'll have the latest as well. Don't know if you've seen have you seen the Nets, Top Golf Nets over there at McGowan Park?
Yeah, it looks like so. Yeah, that means that progress is being made, right?
Almost there. You can see them. Well, you can see them from far away. When I get on the service road, so we're over here at Airport and 65, so you could see the Nets from the other side of Cottage Hill, at least.
Really?
Yeah. It's big. Not the biggest Top Golf out there. I think two stories, 60 bays. They're thinking that will be done, last I saw, middle of this month, possibly end of this month.
No kidding. I wonder how soon you can begin to reserve space for a group.
Yeah, good question. And they were putting the turf down. We drove by this weekend to the grocery store, Costco. They're putting the turf down. I was wondering if I went ahead and hopped out there and started hitting balls, what the construction workers would think. I don't think they would appreciate it.
I have a similar story to that. I don't know if we'll get to it today because it's ridiculous. But, Yeah, I once played 18 holes on a course that was closed.
Oh, nice. Those are the best courses.
Yeah, well, there was nobody in front of me.
No, nobody hitting into you either.
And where is the beer lady? Well, she's not here.
Yeah, you have to bring your own beer lady, I guess. So Topgolf, it'll be ready here maybe by the end of this month. I know a lot of folks are looking forward to that. Big news today, though, Lanyap puts out there, with Topgolf going in right there at McGowan Park, across government, will be a Dave and Buster's.
Really?
So you know where all those car lots are? And that one lot,
yes.
I think Bob's Towing and Gas Station.
Yeah. Got,
looks like that corner of the service road across from McGowan Park, across government, they're putting a Dave and Buster's in, which if you haven't seen a Dave and Buster's, it's
Topgolf without the golf.
It's Topgolf without the golf. A huge arcade.
I've never been there. I've only seen the commercials.
Basically a sports bar / arcade. We went up to Birmingham, little family vacation, little Orwig family of four vacation last year, and we basically lived at, I mean, we stayed at Oak Mountain, didn't have Wi-Fi or anything.
I remember that.
We lived at Dave and Buster's.
Yeah.
And had a great time. The girls absolutely loved it. The arcade games, the flashing lights. So not only will Mobile soon have Topgolf, Dave and Buster's, they're saying it could be completed and open to the public around December of next year. That's what Lanyap has so far today. And then you look at Bel Air, and you have that Drew Brees, Dave and Buster's-like restaurant / arcade, Surge Entertainment. I guess it's open.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Surge Entertainment. I think they have laser tag, maybe, did I see bowling? But also kind of like Dave and Buster's, like a sports bar kind of vibe. You can get dinner, you can get drinks, and also a lot of fun activities for the entire family.
I've heard talk about the possibility downtown would get like, and I think this is a great idea, like a smaller, maybe 8-lane bowling alley.
Really?
Would that be cool?
Yeah.
8-lane bowling alley, and then if you've got plans downtown with a group or even a couple of you, you're thinking, well, what are our options?
Mm-hmm.
Not restaurants only. We still got the theater down there, right?
Because it's Crescent.
Crescent Theater, so whatever it's been renamed. But I think that a bowling alley would do great downtown.
Yeah, I really can see it. I am worried. I'm so excited about Topgolf and Dave and Buster's, all these things I can take my family to, which is really just an excuse for me to get out there and have fun.
Yeah. Candy, where can we go and watch all the scores so we can see how your bets came out?
That's what they all want to know. They want to know how Dad's bets are going. Can West Mobile sustain it? Will these companies stick around? And you also wonder with the Bay Bears leaving a few years ago. I mean, look at that area now. We were kind of waiting for McGowan Park to flourish for some time. Bay Bears leave. Now you've got a Topgolf, a Dave and Buster's going in across the street.
I would call that flourishing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long they're going to make it or if, you know, I don't know, but, you know, they're giving it a shot. I was really surprised that Dave and Buster's right there on the Beltline across from government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will it survive? And I hope it does. I really do. But, I mean, we couldn't get people out to a ball game. But it's a different story. This is indoors, you know, air conditioning.
Yeah, I think that it is a different story. Also, Mobile, again, has always been known as not a game-to-game town, more of an event town. And whether that's absolutely true or not, I don't know. But you can look at the Jags, baseball and basketball. Their attendance is not great.
Not great.
And football better, but, and they're having a pretty good year this year, so we'll see how it turns out at the next home game. But and that's really when you call that West Mobile, I don't know. That's West Mobile at this point. Look,
right.
Even before the annexation, there's areas out there that consider themselves. I would always think out toward Schillinger at this point is West Mobile.
West Mobile.
Yeah, it's almost in the middle of the town now.
Yeah, soon West Mobile will be Mississippi East.
Well,
right there. Right across from Mississippi.
I know there's more areas they're looking to possibly annex.
A great text on the text line here. The kids love the flashing lights and video games. That's why I take them to the casino, trying to get them to save up for college. That's great.
That's funny.
Text us at 251-343-0106. This texter, since it's in Mobile, should we go ahead and start calling it Dave and Bust a Cap? Yeah, I don't know that Dave and Buster's would appreciate that.
I know that they wouldn't. By the way, I'm looking at the prices of standing desks.
Okay.
Trying to figure out just how indebted you should feel to Sean Sullivan. It looks like the desk that you have is somewhere. It looks similar, and it looks like the price is $139.99.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many days is that equivalent to? How many days do I need to stay standing before I sit down?
We don't, just stay standing, man. It's going to be a while.
Forever. 12:30, John Sharp with AL.com joins us next on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, Dalton Orwig, Dan Brennan filling in for Sean Sullivan today. You can hear us every morning on this great radio station, 6 to 9 a.m. in Mobile Mornings. Stay tuned. Coming up before 2 o'clock, we have another pair of tickets to give away to a comedian. I love his work, Bert Kreischer, coming to Mobile. The Tops Off World Tour, October 15th is that show. It'll be the Mobile Civic Center Theater Arena Theater. Mobile Civic Center Arena Theater. That's right. And we'll give another pair of tickets away to that before the end of the show today.
I think there's an arena and there's a theater.
Okay.
I think that's
actually
weird.
That is a great, yeah. Will it be actually in the, I assumed the theater, but maybe.
My guess would be the theater.
Yeah. But he has a huge following.
Okay.
It says Mobile Civic Center Arena. I'll get clarification on that. Oh, it that's is in the arena. Yeah, he's got a huge following.
He's big.
Theater's not big enough. Yeah. The arena is where it is. So we'll give away a pair of tickets to that before the end of the show today. Glad to have on with us this segment, a man whose work I read all the time, John Sharp with AL.com. John, thanks for coming on with Dan and I today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So
yeah, man.
We'll get into the news here in a minute and really intriguing stuff about who may or may not run for District 2 and that election next year, but got to start with how are you doing in Pick'em? You still putting the picks up there? How are things looking, John?
Yeah, I'm still putting the picks up there. I haven't had a chance. I shudder to think where I'm at. It's not been pretty this year, Dalton. Let's put it that way. It's been a challenge. It's going to continue to be a challenge. I think we're heading into an era of college football in which unpredictability rules, and that makes it kind of fun, I think.
But I would agree.
It makes it difficult to make picks, though.
It does.
I don't know if there's any super teams out there, and I don't know that. And it's all just changed in like 1 year, like blink.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's the same. How did that happen? But
just wait till next year. Well, it's the transfer portal.
And who knows what's going on with NIL? That's all. There's a story for you, John. What in the heck's really going on? How soon do those kids get paid?
Right. Where to begin with that? Yeah, I don't know. But I do know that as a college football fan, that it is exciting, but it's also, look, next year the Big Ten goes topsy-turvy, as does the SEC, adding a whole bunch of powerhouse teams into their conferences. Yep. So I think we all just got to get used to this.
Yeah, and the 12-team playoff, we could very well be talking about national champion Iowa Hawkeyes after next year.
They need an offense first. They're going to be more than go 2 yards in a cloud of nothing. So
you'll be right there in the mix. So this week, I guess tomorrow is the hearing where a map is decided on. I had the special master pull out the three maps that they'll have to choose from last week, and that was big news. The attorney general put up his, I guess, I don't know if he'd be called an appeal, or Thursday was the deadline to put in your appeals or whatever they're calling that thing. Obviously, the attorney general, a lot of Republicans in the state not happy with the three maps drawn up by the cartographer. And immediately, John, questions started rolling in. Who is going to run for District 2? What does this mean for Barry Moore and Jerry Carl, two sitting congressmen? And now that Barry Moore will likely, with all three of these maps, be in the same District 1 is our Congressman Jerry Carl, how things look there. And then curveball here, maybe even some candidates who don't currently live in that District 2.
That's correct. And that could include Barry Moore as well. Now, technically, he'll be in District 1, but legally, he could run for a seat back in District 2. Now, it'll be much difficult, a different seat than it is currently. Mm-hmm. But, that option exists. It is a purple district. We're looking at a purple district. Now, I keep saying, you know, it is. We don't know exactly what the final map is going to be, but we see the three maps remaining. And I think the reality has set in that, you know, Mobile and Baldwin counties are not being kept whole in the final congressional seat. There won't be this AL1, which we've all gotten used to with the coastal counties being together. They are now separate, although there will be some, you know, some South Mobile County and into West Mobile County will be part of the new congressional District 1, which will bleed all the way into the Wiregrass. So we have, you know, it's just, we have to find out what the final map's going to be, but we got kind of an idea of what it's going to be. And that's what led me to doing some of the stories that I did last week in regards to looking at who might potentially be some of the candidates in District 2, which is really essentially the first competitive, in a general election standpoint, could be the first competitive congressional race we've had in a long time. And, you know, we're looking at that. That's all eyes are going to be on that district.
Explain, John, if you would, the way the three maps, especially when it pertains to Mobile County, how the three maps maybe are similar or not the same at all.
So why they're similar is that they bleed into Mobile, the city of Mobile, Pritchard. You know, I haven't really gotten an up close look exactly where that boundary is going to be, or what street it's going to go down to. But we're looking at the maps going down into the city of Mobile, and including a lot of Pritchard, and we're talking the Crichton area, Tolmanville, in order to get the racial demographic balances to the optimal level that the courts have required them to be for that congressional district too. So that's why you're seeing the district boundaries coming into the northern part of Mobile County, all the way into the city of Pritchard and into Mobile. So Mobile is essentially being carved into two districts. There is a lot of political what ifs, a lot of maneuvering, a lot of discussion going on right now. What could this be? You know, potentially the it exists that you could have two members of Congress coming out of Mobile County. Mm-hmm. You have one elected in District 2, and Jerry Carl, if he's reelected in District 1, he says he's already announced that he's running again. So, you know, those are two situations that, you know, while we talk about this not being good for Mobile, we've heard that a lot. You know, the potential exists where it could be good for Mobile. However, Montgomery County is going to be the dominant county in Congressional District 2 because that entire county is part of this congressional district, the entire city of Montgomery versus only parts of the city of Mobile. So Montgomery will be the – and then we keep hearing the name Stephen Reed out there. He has not announced, but he would be one of the likely potential candidates for that Congressional District 2 seat. He has the name recognition and – And so the concern is down here that you'd have somebody from Montgomery elected, and their interest would be more in Montgomery and not so much focused on what makes Mobile unique. There's been a lot of frustrations on disconnecting Mobile and Baldwin counties down here, especially from Republicans, but also pro-economic development folks who, you know, they talk about the community of interest between the two counties and similar economics and culture. I could go on and on and on, but, you know, the way it looks right now is that, you know, parts of Mobile is splintering off into another congressional district.
Yeah, I'd be very interested and like you said, no one's really thrown their name into the hat yet. I mean, you had Congressman Jerry Carl say he will be running for re-election for District 1. Still waiting to see what District 2 Rep Barry Moore decides to do. But for the new version of District 2, you pointed out the Montgomery Mayor, Stephen Reed. I think it's kind of been, his arrow has kind of been pointing that way for some time now, like that would be likely. I'd love to see an odds maker put some lines on this. State Senator Vivian Figures, another that you mentioned for who could be running in the new district. You also have a couple names here who, some of the more local ones, State Rep Napoleon Bracey, you said he could run, State Senator Kirk Hatcher out of Montgomery. But then you have a couple congresswomen who don't even reside in the new or old District 2. And that would be Representative Wandalyn Gavan out of Birmingham, who has expressed interest, and also State Senator Merrica Coleman out of Birmingham. So how does that work out? You don't have to reside in the district to run for office?
Yeah, that's correct. The Constitution allows it. I just don't think we're used to this discussion in Alabama. It doesn't happen often here, largely because we don't have competitive general elections are not competitive. You know, occasionally you'll have this come up in a primary. It was quite illustrated during the Senate race in 2020, in which J. Jeff Sessions pointed out, hey, his campaigns were running ads calling Senator Tuberville, eventual winner Senator Tuberville, Florida man because of the stories of him living out in Florida. But, you know, it just hasn't come up much in the general elections here. And so this is good. This is interesting. The Constitution says as long as someone is an Alabama resident for one day, and then they got to meet the Constitution's various age and U.S. citizenship requirements. But as long as they're a state resident for one day, they can run for any U.S. House or Senate seat. Well, of course, the Senate's at large, but House seats are, you know, divvied up by district. So they could live in Birmingham and then run for AL1, technically. Or you can live in Muscle Shoals and run for the congressional seat down in, down here. Mm-hmm. So, or vice versa. So, yeah, as crazy as that sounds, that is a option. And considering the, you know, kind of the tantalizing aspects of this new District 2, I think you're going to get some folks that don't live in District 2, but maybe think they might have the name recognition to run down in District 2 and win, announcing their candidacy and then actually living in Birmingham or Huntsville or somewhere else.
One guy who's got the name recognition and is a Montgomery native, or certainly Montgomery County, is former State Senator Dick Brubaker. And he would be, that would be kind of like the challenge, the GOP challenge to actually win this redistricted district, which was designed actually for to give a black voters a larger voice and essentially Democrats a better chance to win. If Brubaker runs a good campaign and as well-heeled as he is and well-regarded as he is, there's talk that, you know, he's going to look it over, see what the odds are, and maybe you know, aggressively go for it.
Yeah, this is no slam dunk for the Democrats. This is not a drawn-up 60-some-odd percent Democratic district. This is a purple district. The key thing for Democrats to win this race, and I've talked to some political strategists, they're looking at the three maps and are saying, well, you know, what if you get a Montgomery candidate who might not be viewed upon favorably on nominee out of the Democratic primary, might not be viewed favorably by Mobile County Democrats. Mobile County Democrats set out this election and then offers an opportunity for the Republicans if they have a strong candidate to sneak in there and win this thing. And so that's that. There is opportunity there. And yes, Dick Brubaker's name is known amongst Republican ranks. He is seriously considering a run. There's other names I've heard. I can't announce yet, but I would be surprised if former Senator Brubaker is the only one. I'd be real surprised. Mm-hmm. So I think the Republican primary is going to have a lot of interesting names as well, and there'll be two strong primaries, both on Democratic and Republican side, and then, you know, moving forward to the general election. As someone who covers this stuff, hey, I think this is great because we never get this often. Right. I mean, we get competition in the primaries for open seats, but after that, it's not unusual for there to be no competition at all in these congressional races.
We're talking with John Sharp from AL.com about this newly reconstructed District 2, who may or may not run, and it is right around the corner. I mean, like you said, most of these congressional races for decades have been decided in the primary, and the primaries are coming up in March. So they're going to put this map out there. You have qualifying starting, I believe, this month for both parties. What is this it? So once they have this hearing tomorrow and decide on a map. Now, I know the Attorney General challenged the maps again last week. You had the Supreme Court come out and basically say, we're not going to put a stay on this. What does that look like from here on out? Is this map that's decided this week, is that what they're going to have to go with?
That's a good question. It's something we'd have to look into still. I don't know if there could be any other challenges, although I think the writing is on the wall here. I mean, the Supreme Court's come out with two very similar statements on this, rulings, and I think all systems go. Once we see what map, which one of these three maps come out, that's how, you know, political strategists, that's how the political parties, that's how everybody's going to look at these two things. I've talked to some folks down here, and I mean, you know, I think the argument that, you know, we need to keep these two counties completely whole is a communities of interest has pretty much moved away into, well, what we're looking at these two districts now separated, or these two counties separated. What does this mean? I think that's kind of the discussion that's going on down here. I think reality is set in that, you know, one of these three maps is going to be the map that we're going forward with. Now, when, you know, what the legal procedures might be from the state after this, I'm not 100% sure yet. We'll look into that. The next step, and this has been a step-by-step process, the next step is the map has to be decided. We need to know which one of these three that we're working with and then go from there.
You know, not only District 2 is affected, that's the one we're all thinking about and talking about, but essentially we've got new districts all over the place, you know, the makeup of the district, including District 1 with Jerry Carl. And essentially, does this district change enough for any concern on Carl's part?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I do think that he, as long as he has strong support in Baldwin County, interesting aside on all this, Baldwin County is going to be the largest county in District 1.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we look at these two when the map's finalized to see what the population numbers are that are remaining in Mobile County. But Baldwin County is going to be the largest population in District 1. Baldwin County is going to be, all eyes on Baldwin County, now politically on the Republican side of the ledger, because it's going to be a very conservative district, and Baldwin County is going to be the biggest player, the biggest county in the district. So for Baldwin County, I think, I know we've heard some negatives about, we're breaking up these two counties and that, but politically speaking, I think the county is its chance to step up. It could have its own candidate someday.
Right.
When it's a county resident running for that district. Well, Bradley Byrne was from Baldwin County, but, could we see a Baldwin primary for District 1? Because that's where the population base is at. I know Dothan's a fairly large-sized city, and I'm sure they'll want to be a factor as well. But really, Baldwin becomes a strong, strong player going forward.
Yeah, what an interesting new era of Alabama politics we're about to embark on beginning next election. Also wanted quickly to get to another story you had last week, and police chief, I think it was, from another city, from Jackson, Mississippi, comes to Mobile to talk with Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine, and kind of dealing with some of the same issues Mobile has dealt with over the years. We had such violent crime just a few years ago, and we've noted that Chief Prine and his crew, they've done a really good job at kind of blunting those numbers, but also getting new recruits and new officers sworn in. That's a difficulty for Jackson and Mobile at this point, where it was one step forward, two steps back for Mobile police recruitment. It seems we've gotten to a point where it's maybe two steps forward, one step back. Still some issues, but in a better spot than we were.
Right. And Jackson, to their credit, the police chief, they got a new police chief over there, and he's see what best practices are at other departments in his state, and then looking outside of state, decided to come over to Mobile. To his credit, he came over to Mobile and spent the day. I'm not sure what their takeaway was when they left, but we met with them, the press did, in the morning and got some comments. They're dealing with some unique situations over there in which the state has, they got a state police agency patrolling parts of Jackson, and I think that's caused a little bit of friction over there as well. But be that as it may, it seems like the police chief is deciding that we have to make improvements in our city. I mean, we have, our homicides are way too high. So, and we're looking at what Mobile's done. Their homicides were high in 2021. We all remember that. Things have gone down the last 2 years. So, what's Mobile done and their strategy? So that's why they came out here. And it was good to have that, they decided to have a little press conference to discuss some of that.
Good stuff. John, we appreciate your time today. Let folks know how they can get the latest from you online and where they can find it.
Yeah, I'm on at AL.com, but also on Twitter or X at JohnSharp99.
All right, we appreciate it, John.
All right, guys, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, John Sharp from AL.com.
Hey, coming back. We'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. That's the text line, also the phone line if you want to hop on with us. And Midday Mobile continues.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Dan Brennan in for Sean Sullivan today. He's off pulling a fire alarm somewhere, I'm sure, to get out of a door.
That's the thing to do.
It is the new rage these days. This segment brought to you by our good friends over at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey Bennett and his crew doing fantastic work on both sides of the bay, as they've been doing for over 15 years now. And some great five-star reviews for 1-800-GOT-JUNK on Google. And, you know, it's easy these days for companies to put up fake reviews, kind of, you know, pay for making their business look better than it actually is. It's not what they do at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You can go on and search their reviews in Google, and you'll recognize a lot of the names of the folks who have used them, including right around here at FM Talk 106.5. Take, for instance, this review David left. My first experience with this company and fully exceeded my expectations. Andrew and Trey were very professional and courteous, and adhered to on-time arrival, quality estimate, and wanting to take care of all the debris I needed to have gone. There are plenty more five-star Google reviews just like that for 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They make junk disappear. All you have to do is point, and it's very easy to set your appointment up today. You can either call the number 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you can do it online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Coming up next hour, your chance to win tickets to see Bert Kreischer at the Mobile Civic Center Arena. We'll give a pair of those away next hour. Also talk with Dr. Lou Campanosi with the Common Sense Campaign when we get back. Midday Mobile, Dalton Orwig and Dan Brennan in for Sean Sullivan. And we roll on right after the news.